have less than 10. If you don't, we'll get a copy to you. There's some out in the foyer. And this lesson we're going to be on, Lord willing, tonight, Sunday, the next Wednesday, and the following Sunday. So for 4 weeks. And to give you a feel for what I want to accomplish, how I want to go through these four classes, is kind of break it up into, I'll say, four parts. Tonight I'd like to cover the last Kings and the fall of Jerusalem. In the next class, I'd like to cover the two kings of Judah, Jotham and Ahaz. Not much on Jotham, and I hate to spend a whole class period on Ahaz because of his wickedness, but yet there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from that, and there's some tie-ins with Isaiah. And then 2 weeks on Hezekiah. The first week will probably be at the Chronicles account of the first class. I said 2 weeks, two classes. It will be at the Chronicles account first. That's the order I gave you on the reading. And then the second class would be out of the King's account. And then probably the next class after these four, when we study Manasseh, I've got on your schedule that Manasseh will probably not take a full week. That's when we'll probably go over Micah, which is a part of this same lesson that we're having tonight, or this same lesson number 10. So we'll spend probably 4.5 weeks on this. So tonight we'll try to do the kingdom of Israel and its fall. Sunday we'll try to do Kings Jotham and Ahaz. And the next Wednesday, the Chronicles account of the kings, particularly the Chronicles account through, you know, the setting up cleanliness of the people and the priest and the Passover and so forth. And then go back to the king's account for his wars, his dealings with Assyria. And then we'll follow that up with his extended life, the 15 years extra that God gave him. The last two lessons that we've had, the dynasty of Jehu on the one hand, and then the kings of Judah ending with King Uzziah. The time period that those two ended their reign on both sides, both nations, was around roughly 750. So tonight's study will pick up in about that same time frame for Jotham on Israel's Judah's side, and then Shalom, who was the one who killed the last of the kings of the Jehu dynasty. And the on the Israel side. So roughly 750 is about where we're starting tonight. Now, if you've been paying attention on the schedule, you'll see that there's some years, and in those years, it gives the approximate time frame for those kings that we're talking about during that lesson. So you can see that as we get down to the lesson beginning tonight, February the 1st. And that's kind of the way we've done the class. That's why we've gone back from Judah to Israel, back to Judah, back to Israel. And that's why we've covered, you know, the breakdown of the kings as we've had to kind of follow the same timeline between the two nations to keep us kind of moving together. So tonight we're picking up in around the year 750. And we'll begin by going over the kings of Israel first, and then we'll pick up with Jotham. But we'll cover on Judah's side. We'll cover Israel all the way through to their fall. We've seen a previous short period of time in Israel's history where in rapid succession they had several kings. This was after Jeroboam had become king, and I think in the next several kings, there was really only one, Baasha, that was a king for a longer period of time. Omri was a little bit longer, but several of those kings were short periods of time. Zimri, 7 days, or Elah, 7 days, that type of thing. And here we run into something similar again, just great upheaval in the nation of Israel. There would have been more upheaval probably earlier, except God had promised Jehu that he would have sons on the throne to what generation? The fourth generation. And so he did. But that last one, Zechariah, from a previous class, only ruled for a short period of time, only 6 months. And he was killed by, looking in 2 Kings chapter 15 and verse 10, 2 Kings 15 and 10, Shalom conspired against him and put him to death. And we're going to see several of this type of thing, okay? Now, these are all measured when they became king by Uzziah. Now, we studied him in the last class, but according to the reading, Shalom became king in the 39th year of Uzziah. Now, he's one king of Israel that the scriptures do not say whether he was good or evil. All the other kings, it talks about them following in the way of Jeroboam, did the evil of Jeroboam. It does not say that about him. And there's one other king that it says it about, but there's a qualifier put on it that we'll get to in a few minutes, Lord willing. But I don't take that to mean that Shalom was a good king in the sense that he did not follow Jeroboam. It says he did evil. No, it doesn't say he did evil. I was looking up at Zechariah. But his reign was short, and there's really nothing given to us about his reign. Well, no, it says it about Elah back earlier in the study, and Elah reigned for 7 days. And it said he followed the way of Jeroboam. So I wouldn't say it because it was so short. The Spirit just didn't see fit to say anything. But I just wanted to bring it to your attention. This is the one king that nothing is said in that regard. And this study also is one that we can stay in one book for, because these kings are not discussed in Chronicles. So it kind of makes the study a little bit simpler from that perspective. But then, what happens to Shalom? Well, he killed and now he's killed, okay? And so in the same chapter 15, in the 14th verse, Menahem comes and strikes him down and reigns in his place. Now, what can you tell me about Menahem? Was he a wicked king? Very violent king, was he not? Okay. Now, this is one of the things that's been warned about, you see. We saw it in Hosea wrote, chapter 1 and verse 4. It was this blood that Jehu had shed, you see, that he was going to be called in judgment for. And we saw the same thing with other nations. Even though they were doing the will of God in destroying, you know, other nations and punishing God's people, it was just this attitude with which they went about it. And we see the same thing with this man here. And certainly, if you did the reading, you see in verse 16, he went up against a city. Now, this city that he went up against was in Assyrian territory. It was actually on the Euphrates River. And you think of such, you know, Assyria, we've already had some where Assyria has been strong, but yet he's all the way into Assyria's territory at the northern end of it on the Euphrates. Well, outside of the scriptures, as you read historical books about Assyria, they kind of came and went. They had a lot of internal issues, perhaps. Certainly Israel did. But at times, Assyria was extremely strong, and at times, Assyria was having to, you know, get their own house in order, so to speak. And so perhaps it was during this time he was able to go up into Syria, up on the river, and take the city that he took. But certainly where it talks about sacking the city, ripping open the women who were pregnant, and so forth. John, I'm getting a lot of feedback. Can you just... Yeah. Okay. I've moved it down. Well, I'm still getting it, but trying to make it better. So Menahem was aggressive in trying to bring some cities back under his control. But this power that he demonstrated against Assyria didn't stay for long because in the 19th verse, Assyria came back against him, and Israel was required to pay some talents, some money to Assyria. It's interesting because of some of the things going on in our own political environment right now. One of the discussions going on between our leadership is the question of taxes, and the rich should pay more taxes. Well, evidently that's not a new concept to come up now, because you notice in verse 20 of this chapter, how Menahem paid the money that the king of Assyria was exacting from him. He just charged the rich and so that he could pay it. So I just thought that was interesting that it comes up with our political environment the way it is right now. But Menahem was not put to death in a sense of a conspiracy. His son Pekahiah ruled in his place. Now, there's three times I put Hekaliah in your notes, but every time I spelled it wrong. It's H-I-A-H. I spelled it L-I-A-H, and that's because I thought it was L-I-A-H. That is not a typo. It's a mental, whatever you call it. So maybe I got into better light, and I learned that his name is Haya, not Laya. So he reigned for 2 years. Nothing much to say about his reign. Now notice again, though, it's measured in terms when Azariah was king. He became king during the 50th year of Azariah. Same king as Uzziah. I grew up calling him Uzziah. But again, he did evil, following the ways of Jeroboam. Now, he was killed in a conspiracy by a man with a similar name, Pekah. And Pekah reigned, for these kings that we're talking about right now, he reigned for the longest, for 20 years. And the scriptures say that he did evil. I want you to notice, though, something here in his reign on verse 29. And it talks about some of the cities that he invaded. Notice it mentions Gilead, Galilee, the land of Naphtali. And I just want to give you a thought. Turn to Matthew 4. Now just imagine these people as Assyria comes down, because Assyria was a, as we would say, a lean and mean army. They were cruel, okay? In Matthew 4, it says that Jesus, in verse 12, Jesus heard John had been arrested. He drew into Galilee. And leaving Nazareth, he went and lived in Capernaum by the sea in the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali, so that was spoken by the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. The land, and that's in chapter 9 and verse 1 of Isaiah. The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people living in darkness have seen a great light. For those dwelling in the region of shadow of death, on them a light has dawned. Perhaps what the writer of what Isaiah was referred to and has been referred to here by Matthew is instances such as this right here, where Naphtali and Zebulun were at the northern borders of Israel. Assyria is north of them. And so when Assyria would come down, they would come through their territory. And as they would come through, those people bore the brunt of the invasion. And thus these reading that we just had, people dwelling in darkness, in the shadow of death. Perhaps that's what was being referred to. And to those people, Jesus has come bringing the light of the gospel and of salvation. So just a thought for you to think about there. Any comment or question? Okay. Now, as Pekah's father had become, well, Pekah himself had become king, so he loses the kingship. He's struck down by Hoshea, who was the last king of Israel. Now, we're going to talk more about Pekah, because there's a relationship with Pekah and the king of Syria, and their confrontation with Ahaz that's discussed in the book of Isaiah. So we're going to go into that, some of the events of Pekah, not his death, but some of the events of Pekah when we get into King Ahaz. So we're going to hold off on the events that Ahaz, surrounding Ahaz and Isaiah. So Pekah is killed, and then Hoshea is put to death. I mean, Hoshea becomes king. Now, I want to say this. If you try, and believe me, I have, and it doesn't work. But if you try to look at when a king reigned and when he died and figure out all the years so you can just lay a neat timeline down for he started here, he ended here, he started here, and he ended here, and go through and everything just add up to the right number of years, it's not going to work. Okay, let me give you just a very easy example why. If you look in verse 30 of chapter 15, it says, Hoshea made a conspiracy against Pekah and struck him down, put him to death, and reigned in his place in the 20th year of Jotham, okay, the son of Uzziah. Now, if you look down in chapter 16, if you look down in the, stay in chapter 15, in verse 33. Now, we just read in the 20th year of Jotham, but in verse 33 down below it, it says Jotham reigned 16 years. So you've got him only reigning 16 years, yet you're talking about the 20th year of his reign. Now, let's carry this one step further. Again, you see back in verse 30, Hoshea became king in the 20th year of Jotham. But you look over in chapter 17 and verse 1, it was in the 12th year of Ahaz. Well, see, Ahaz followed Jotham. So evidently, by some measurement of time, the 20th year of Jotham is the same as the 12th year of Ahaz and the both kings of Judah. So it's very difficult. And what it has to do with, there's overlaps of kingships, co-rules and such as that, co-regents, as some may call it. So there's periods of time that the scriptures don't lay out for us, but we can see the evidence of it where there's overlap within kings. An example might be, I said might be, I think so, trying to figure out the numbers, Azariah was struck with leprosy. He was confined. Well, was he able to rule, or did the following king, you see, which was his son Jotham, come in and rule some during that time? Maybe that explains those 4 years difference, you see. But it's just something to think about. But evidently, Ahaz was ruling at the same time on the other end, co-rule on the other end, perhaps. So this has been through several kings. I've not really brought it up because it's so difficult to look at. But if you ever get into Kings and Chronicles and you start looking at these years and you try to lay it out, it's not going to work, okay? And there's some And there's some writings that try to explain some of this, but a lot of it is, you know, speculation on their part. Is that really the way it is? So I take it as it's written, and I move on. I'm not personally concerned about those things. But then we get into the last king, and let's look at chapter 17, beginning of verse 1. And this was Hoshea was king for, he said he reigned for 9 years. He did evil, but notice the qualifier. What's the qualifier in verse 2?
Not as the kings of Israel.
Okay. Not as the kings before him. Now, we don't have any detail on that. That's all we have. Did he follow the ways of Jeroboam? I don't know. It's not said. But certainly, there is something good about tonight's lesson in that we see two kings of Israel that remark concerning Jeroboam is not made. And perhaps they did, but at least it's good to have maybe a little bit of hope that they didn't. And of course, Syria comes up against him, makes him pay tribute. But then in the sixth year of his reign, the king, besieges, Samaria. And for 3 years, siege goes on. And then in verse 6, in the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, a king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried the Israelites away. Now, we've come a long way from the days of David and Solomon. We've come when Solomon had a magnificent kingdom that went all the way up to the Euphrates River. But now here, this kingdom is down to really two countries. And the scriptures only speak of one, two tribes. The scriptures normally speak of Judah. Well, Benjamin is included in that. And then perhaps some of the areas to the south as well, such as Simeon and so forth. But because of their isolation, so to speak, away from the main tribes of Israel. But we've come a long way. And we want to discuss, you know, some of the things about why as we get into this. Look in verse 7. And let's notice some things that it says. It says, this occurred because the people of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods. So it occurred because they feared other gods, and then notice the ends. Verse 8, and walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord drove out, and in the customs of the kings of Israel, that the kings of Israel had passed. And the people of Israel did secretly. They built for themselves high places in all their towns. And it continues, setting up the pillars and the Asherim on all the hills and under the green trees. And they made offerings on high places as the nations did whom the Lord carried out before these. And they served idols and so forth. And God had not sat idly by when all this happened. He sent prophet after prophet. He even emphasized it. He says, every prophet and every seer. So a prophet, a seer was a prophet. So he just kind of been redundant to say, I've warned you and warned you and warned you. And you've refused. In verse 14, he says they would not listen, but they were stubborn. And so he's saying the people did these things. The people of Israel sinned. The people of Israel walked in the customs. The people of Israel sinned secretly. You know, there's one thing about a secret sin. You know, we can talk about sins of ignorance. You know, hey, I didn't know. I won't do it again. But you can't say that about a secret sin. You just can't do it. Because you know it's a sin. And if you didn't think it was a sin, you wouldn't be trying to keep it secret. And we need to be aware in our own lives that we don't have secret sins. I'm not going to know what they were. It wouldn't be a secret in your life. And you're not going to know what mine may be. And if I have some, I need to get rid of them. But I need to examine myself. You need to examine yourself. And make sure in your life there's not a secret sin. But they had. I don't know what they were. Perhaps it had to do with their worship. I don't know. Perhaps it had to do with other things, their false worship. So these are the things that they were doing that God was displeased and was going to bring about their destruction. Now, as we look at this, we see that these sins started with Jeroboam. Look over in verse 21. When he had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and Jeroboam drove Israel from following the Lord and made them commit great sin. So, again, the question comes up is what was the beginning of this? The beginning had to do with what some people may have felt was something that's convenient. It's convenient not to have to go to Jerusalem. It's convenient to have here a place we can go worship in Dan and Bethel, and it'll be just as good because my heart is wanting to do what's right. It'll be just as well. So we'll go for it. And with the other things that accompanied that, the priesthood and the idols that were built and the change in the time of the sacrifice and such as that. But, of course, we know from our study of Jeroboam that Jeroboam did it for what reason?
So they wouldn't lose people.
So the people wouldn't go to Jerusalem and want to stay. Okay? So we see right then a great breakdown in the faith of Jeroboam right off the bat. Okay? But that's what happens when we look to things that may be a little easier, maybe more convenient. It's not to say that something more convenient is going to be wrong. It's not to say that. But certainly when convenience, you know, changes our worship, then we need to take a look and examine it from the scriptures. We had some that did. You remember when we studied Asa? Actually, it's when we studied Rehoboam before Asa. When we studied Rehoboam, what was it that for 3 years made his kingdom strong? You remember some of the priests and the Levites and some of the people came down from the northern tribes because they didn't want to worship that way. They knew it was wrong. And so they came down and lived among the people of Judah. And it was because of the faithfulness that they brought that the nation became strong for 3 years until Rehoboam himself felt this sense of strength through the cities that he had fortified and so forth. So it began with these sins of Jeroboam. Now, those that came down, you see, they nipped it in the bud to start with. They said, we can't live here. We might not can change the nation, but we can't live here among this. We can't change Rehoboam. We can't change all of this priesthood that he's set up. We don't have the power to go undo what he's done. But I do have power over my own life. I do have power over what I do. And so those said, we're going to leave Israel. We're going to leave our land and our possessions, and maybe even some of their family. Who knows? But I'm going to go down and live in Judah where I can worship God in Jerusalem because that's the place that God has said he was to be worshipped. I can go do that. And I can worship him without these calves and without Dan and Bethel and without this false priesthood. So that's the power that they had. And that's the same power that we have. we can't control what goes on around us. We can't control what our management does at work. We can't control what the government does. And a child can't control what their parents do. But all of us can control ourselves and do what's right. They may require sacrifice. It may require leaving some things and putting some things behind us. But we can control ourselves. Because to stay in a situation where sin abounds, then after a while, the sin becomes commonplace. Certainly the people, as this went on, would look to their parents and say, well, my parents worship this way, my grandparents worship this way, and their parents worship this way, following these sins of Jeroboam. And, you know, they might think it's right because of that. They might think it's right because the leaders of the people were that way. This was the priesthood. This was the kingship. All of them were leading the people in this direction. So again, they say, well, it must be right. And then you get the crowd, my neighbors, my neighbors, my neighbors, and the next tribe and the next tribe. We're all doing it this way. And so people become satisfied and complacent, but they're not anywhere around the truth. Any comment or question? I've kind of tied in the next point already, and that was to go back and reread 2 Chronicles 11, 13 and through 17. And that talks about during the time of Rehoboam, that of what they did, and that others could have done the same thing at any time during the history of these two nations. People could have done that same thing. Now, we're going to discuss later on in this same lesson in Hezekiah. And we're not going to turn there now. But Hezekiah, in the Chronicles account, gives opportunity for the people of Israel to do the same thing. He's restoring the Passover. And so he sends couriers out to all the cities in the tribes of Israel to try to bring, you know, people down to Jerusalem to participate in the sacrifice of the Passover. And when we get to that reading, we'll say some scoffed at him. They won't have anything to do with it. Ridiculed the couriers who went up there. But there were others who listened and came down. Did they have to scoff those that did? No. It was their choice. It's because they had become to like the way they were living and the, quote, worship that they were engaged in. I want you to notice two things here, two contrasting things. Notice when we begin back in verse 7 of chapter 17, it says the people, the people, the people. Okay, but when you notice when you go to verse 21, Jeroboam drove Israel, okay, from following the Lord and made them commit sin. So we've got both ends of the stick here. We've got the leadership driving them to do wrong, but yet we've got the people doing wrong. And so we see God looking at responsibility from both ends. Because the people were taught. The people knew better. They did not have to take the leadership, accept the leadership that Jeroboam was forcing upon those who would remain up there. Jeroboam's at fault for doing it. And he'll face God for that. But the people were wrong for following and becoming satisfied with it and not going back to the law and saying, this is not right. I can't live my life this way. We see already from the count of Rehoboam, some did change right off the bat. They saw it. And then, like I said, here, as we get into Hezekiah, we see some others did. And there may be some along the way that is not brought out that may have done the same thing. I don't know. But we see the wrong from both ends. One end driving, the other end accepting. And both are going to be called into judgment for that. And it brings up to a point here. Are we at fault? Who's to blame if we follow erring leadership? And it's not an idle question. First off, you've got passages like Acts chapter 20, beginning in verse, well, just say beginning in verse 28, warning about it with the eldership, that from among their own numbers, they would fall away, become like wolves, you know, among sheep. You've got passages such as Galatians 1, which says if a gospel is preached by even an angel from heaven or another apostle, other than what Paul had preached to them, you know, to let them be accursed. You've got passages such as in Acts 17, where it says the Bereans were more noble than the Thessalonians, and that they searched the scriptures to see whether those things were so. What things? The things that Paul was teaching. Here, Paul was an apostle, inspired of God, and they were checking him. And that's brought out, you see, as an example of the way that we ought to conduct ourselves. So on our end, if we follow bad leadership, we're at fault. We've been warned that there is going to be bad leadership and that we need to check things that we're told. Of course, what we check them against is God's Word. What if this had happened 60 or 70 years ago? What if this had happened back around 1850? You know, even, what's that, 150 years, 160 years ago? What if it happened then, you see? If it had, there's a good chance we wouldn't have First Christian Church, or Disciples of Christ. There's a chance that that denomination wouldn't even exist, you see. We wouldn't have the schism that we've got, where some have gone off into social gospel and all sorts of things that they've gone off in. It wouldn't have happened, you see. It's because of the people following bad leadership. But people follow bad leadership because they like where the leadership is taking them. And that's what we have to examine ourselves for. That our commitment is to God. And we're going to recognize when we're being taken away from where God would have us go. Then we've got to have the faith to come back. We've got to have the desire to come back. Sometimes serving God is not easy. Sometimes if you're raising a family, and, you know, children are different. Some children may be readily amenable to come to services. Other children maybe want to do some other things. So if you've got social programs and the Super Bowl game and on and on and on, you know, maybe to make those easier for those other children to come. And our parents like that because they don't have to tug and tug sometimes with these children to get them to come. So sometimes people like the way it's going when it's going astray. People want to do good to all men. They just don't want to do it themselves. So we're among a group of people who will do it, and I can just kind of do a token amount. But that's what people like. So many people don't like to put themselves out, and they want to do what they do. Some people like it because sin becomes acceptable. And it may be an adulterous relationship that one is in. But this leadership says that's all right. So I can stay in this adulterous relationship. I don't want to go over here, and I don't want to get too much into the scriptures because I might learn something that I don't want to learn. So I'm satisfied right here. So we begin to like it, okay? As we get on, even as we get into studying later on, even Judah itself, you know, Judah began to like it, you see. And so we get comfortable, we like it, and we don't achieve. Well, if a person wants to serve God, that person will have no trouble in ways to serve God. There will be no end to the service that he can provide. And what I would suggest is that we just open our eyes. Because every day, it's going to come across, come to our attention, something that we can do in service to God, in service to our brethren. Do it. We don't even have to go looking for it. It's going to come across. We know the brotherhood in here. We know who's sick. We know who maybe needs some attention, maybe needs a visit, maybe needs a meal taken to them, maybe needs a phone call. We know that. There's so many things that we know about one another. We should never be having to sit down and scratch our head and what can I do, what can I do? There's something for us to do. We just got to put our mind to it that we want to do it and make it a part of us. So, beginning in verse 24.
One observation, verse 21, that verse refers to Jeroboam drove Israel. Kingdom divided, Matthew 31, this is 722, that's 200 years ago. What it does is show the power of division. I don't know if the people, say, 700, said, oh, Jeroboam did this, I think we'll do it. And yet, it is a consequence of what he did.
Yeah.
We're not kings, but many of us are fathers. And what we teach our families, of course we direct them, may affect our children, great-grandchildren, great-grandchildren down the road.
That's right.
Solemn lesson.
That's right. That's right. So, in the picking up in verse 24, the king of Assyria takes the people and he puts them in several countries. It lists them there. Babylon is one. You see, at this point in time, Babylon is not a power. It's later on that Babylon becomes a power. We're still over 100 years from the capture of Jerusalem. So Babylon is not a power at this point. The Lord sends lines among the people that are moved into the area of Israel because they weren't following they weren't recognizing God as God. They were worshiping the gods of the lands where they'd come from. So God sent lines upon them. And so that gets back to the king of Syria, and he sends a priest of God's people down there. Now imagine doing that. Here comes a priest who is a priest of Israel, not a priest of Judah. He doesn't know God's law. So you talk about, you know, a case of the blind leading the blind. That's who was sent. And perhaps he did teach some things about God, but still, it goes on to say in this reading, and you can read this down from verse 29 on, how every nation made gods, you know, of their own, you know, history and so forth, where they came from. But it says in verse 32, they feared the Lord and appointed for among themselves all sorts of people as priests and high priests who sacrificed for them in the shrines of the high places. So they feared the Lord, but they also served their own gods. So this was really what what Israel had been doing. And Judah to some extent. They would claim to serve Jehovah God, but yet at the same time, they were serving every idol that would come their way. Next class, we'll pick up with Jotham, and we'll try to get through Jotham and Ahaz next week. Thanks. Or next class.